Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. Today is another AMA episode, that is Ask Me Anything. I'd love to answer your questions, and if you have a question you think is going to be of broad interest, send it in. I'll answer it live on the air. Send your questions to Victor at victorjm.com. That's Victor at victorjm.com. Today's question comes from Robbie, who writes, what is the economic difference and the difference in investment thesis between the different types of RV parks? Well, this is a great question. RV parks come in all shapes and sizes, and as with all forms of real estate, the value is hyperlocal. So it's impossible to generalize, but when I think of RV parks, I tend to segment them into five main product segments. Number one, these are the natural and vacation type destination parks. Number two, these are the seasonal parks where people park their unit there for the entire season. Number three, there are the drive-by convenience. Number four, temporary workforce housing. And number five, luxury camping. Now, let's look at each of these independently. Just try and segment the market a little bit. They are each distinct product offerings targeting a different client. So number one, the natural destinations. These are close to some natural amenity. Might be close to a beach or a national park, or maybe a beautiful area in the Rocky Mountains. Some of these are close to attractions like a geyser or some caves or a redwood forest. Some of these destinations are also anchored by major annual events like, say, Burning Man or the Aviation Festival in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. What all of these parks have in common is that they have a peak season that might be, in fact, very short. In fact, they might be even closed for half the year. These parks tend to offer stays ranging from a few nights to at most a few weeks. You rarely see people stay for longer. The nightly rates are going to be higher than other parks because the unique value proposition they offer is proximity to a destination. The second type of RV park is a seasonal park. These are often nestled in the woods on the border of a lake, and they cater to local families who want a seasonal cottage experience with the lower budget and maintenance of an RV. These RVs get parked at the start of each season, and they don't move for the entire year. It's common for some RVs to be parked in the same location for multiple years. Residents there are going to build a wooden deck and a semi-permanent barbecue pit. They might even surround the RV with a lattice to prevent small animals from taking refuge underneath the RV. Number three, these are the drive-by parks, the ones that cater to people who are traveling across the country. They might stay for a night or two. They're situated fairly close to major highways, and they offer a balance of convenience and an attractive setting. The amenities are less important because the guests are transient. They're not staying for very long. They need a place to empty their holding tanks and to charge their batteries, and it's got to be better than a parking lot at the back of Walmart. Number four, the temporary workforce housing park. These are typically situated next to major industrial installations where the workforce is going to be coming in and out for a few months at a time throughout the year. You often see these associated with the oil and gas industry. And then number five, the luxury camping segment is the one that caters to the very high-end RVs. These are often the RVs that are built on a modified tour bus platform. Many of them cost $250,000 and up. We often see these in the southern states. They absolutely want the best of amenities. They will pay a premium for a sunshade to park that tour bus underneath, keep it out of the sun. Location is important as well, and these vehicles have a very large turning radius. They don't want to get stuck in the mud, and they don't want mud in their undercarriage, so we're not talking about any unpaved surfaces, please. So from the description that I've given you for each of these five different types of RV parks, it's pretty clear that these products are quite distinct, and they're targeting each a different customer at a very different price point. Some are priced by the night, others by the month, and still others by the season. For example, a luxury covered RV site might be a few hundred dollars a night. That's more than a hotel room, and it's just a parking spot. A seasonal rental could be, say, $4,000 to $5,000 a year, again, just for a parking space. Transient RV parks near the interstate might be $50 to $120 a night. And then destination parks priced by the week might be somewhere between $500 to $700 a week. Workforce housing might be, say, $600 a month. Again, these are all different products at different price points aimed at different clients. Now, I know what you're thinking. You can stay in a hotel for $150 a night where they're supplying you a king-size bed and a luxurious bathroom and a coffee machine and an iron. And at a campground, you need to supply all of that, and all you're getting is a place to plug in and a place to park. The pricing seems out of whack, and I understand that perspective. the pricing is determined by the laws of supply and demand. When you're evaluating any opportunity, you need to understand the market dynamics. There's been a big surge in RVs during the pandemic, and the numbers are starting to revert to the pre-pandemic patterns. When you look at market data, you want to make sure that you look at both pre- and post-pandemic numbers when you make your assessment of demand. The parks themselves also require maintenance and upkeep. The operations require staff. The cost of hiring staff is going to be pretty much the same whether you have a space for 30 RVs or 300. But the park has to be sized appropriately to the demand. If the park is too large, your vacancy is going to be too high and your capital costs are going to be too high. If the park is too small, then the manpower to operate the park will be hard to afford, even if you're full. The infrastructure costs are similar to those of, say, a residential subdivision. Even if the water supply and the sewage treatment are privately owned and maintained, they still need to meet the public health standards for the state or province in which the park resides. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, as someone who spent close to $40,000 last year in public health-related compliance costs for both water and sewer, that providing water for an RV park is much more involved than just drilling a well and installing a pump. You want to develop a financial model for the RV park that's going to require a deep understanding of the economics of the customer base, the competitive landscape, the pricing, and the customer demand throughout the year, and of course, the expenses associated with operating and maintaining the park. And if you get any of those variables wrong, your optimistic investment might turn out into a long, slow grind. I want to thank you, Robbie, for a great question. And for the listeners at home, have an awesome rest of your day. Go make some great things happen, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.